We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our coverage of Governor Quinn's budget message continues. Our guest in this portion of the program is Rick Winkle of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. If you're just joining us this afternoon, you might have missed this news. The governor is urging lawmakers to raise income taxes to avoid deep cuts in spending on schools and colleges. He proposed an increase of 1 percentage point in the income tax today during a brief budget message to the General Assembly. Listeners, join us with your thoughts. I invite your questions and comments. Join us by telephone or email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Our toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Rick Winkle is the director of the Office of Public Leadership in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs and an adjunct professor of law in the College of Law at the U of I. He's a former state lawmaker, having served in both chambers of the Illinois General Assembly. A Republican, he served in the House from 1995 to 2003 and in the Senate from 2003 to 2007. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, will-talk@illinois.edu. Welcome back. Good to see you again.
Well, thanks. Glad to be here.
So, what do you think about this bombshell?
Well, much shorter speech, very much to the point. He made the case that let me put it this way. Some people have accused the General Assembly, the state legislature, of exercising an approach that could be characterized as deny, do nothing, defer.
Mm-hmm.
In common talk, that would be kicking the can
down the road.
And, you know, I would not accuse the governor, based on this speech, of doing that. I mean, he's certainly not denying that there is a fiscal crisis. I mean, he acknowledges that there is an extreme problem that faces Illinois. And he's not proposing to do nothing. I mean, but I guess what concerns me is this. I don't get from this speech. I haven't had time to add all the numbers and completely go through it. But I don't see how it addresses a solution to the structural deficit. I don't see how it addresses the $13 billion in accumulating debt. I mean, he acknowledges that it's there, but I don't see how we're actually – to me, that's the biggest problem facing the state, how he's addressing that. And so in some ways, I think he is on that aspect, which is I think the most important aspect, kicking the can down the road again and deferring a solution that really addresses the thing that's really the most troubling aspect of state government right now, kicking the can down the road in the sense of not providing a solution that would provide us with revenues that match our expenditures. Okay, now what he's done, the surprising part today, which I was surprised,
mm-hmm.
Was that he has made an announcement that he's for a 1% income tax increase and directly linked that to a threatened cut to education, K-12 through higher education, of $1.3 billion. So he's obviously looking for political support outside the General Assembly that will put pressure on the General Assembly for a tax increase. But that number that would probably be generated by a 1% increase is going to be somewhere around $1 billion, maybe a little bit more, maybe about as much as what he's threatening or proposing that would mm-hmm. education would have to be cut. Which obviously that's a direct linkage. So the trade-off would be, okay, raise the income tax by 1%. We will dedicate that to education and protect education and prevent the increased class sizes, prevent students in higher education from being sent home or being unable to attend, and prevent the layoff of perhaps 13 to 17,000 education-related employees. All that is very, very important. But it's almost as if by having done that, he's fired the one last shot that a lot of us see is, you know, the income tax increase then goes to a single purpose, encapsulates education, which, look, I'm in favor of. In 2005, I sponsored a bill that would have increased the income tax and gone to education. So I'm in favor of the concept. My problem is we're beyond that point. I would not sponsor that bill today. Let me put it to you that way. Mm-hmm. Things have changed so dramatically. The budget is so out of kilter. The structural deficit is so huge, and the debt is accumulating at such a rapid rate that should be the focus and not tying it to education at this point. Obviously, I'm for money to higher education and education K-12. My problem is I think this budget proposal will not fly. It doesn't hold together, does not address the structural deficit. I don't think it's going to go very far.
Okay. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Rick Winkle of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you're invited to join us with your questions, comments, your thoughts. 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. That's the toll-free number, 800-222-WILL. Or you can join us by email, the email address will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, let's talk a little bit about what a structural deficit is. And we're talking about a lot of money. Kent Redfield, political scientist, said just a few minutes ago, this is a story too scary to tell. $15 billion that we're looking at. A lot of pain for a long time.
Well, that's right. I mean, the thing came on. I mean, the economic, as Fred Gertz has said, I've heard many times, the national economic crisis was not, well, that was a surprise. But no one can really truthfully say that they were surprised that we've run into fiscal problems here in Illinois. It's come on slowly. It's almost insidious over time, where we've had our expenditures outpace our revenues. And Professor Dick Dye from IGPA has said his research, his numbers show that it's outpaced it by about 1% a year, but that compounds. And so slowly but surely, we've gotten our lines out of kilter, where the expenditures have outstripped the revenues, and it's built in the structure of our fiscal system right now. And so that's the structural deficit that keeps growing. We accrue a budget shortfall. I mean, this will be carried over. The shortfall this year will be carried over to the next year. We've been doing that for too long. We're looking at a $13 to $15 billion budget shortfall for the next fiscal year. But that's if we cut spending and do some borrowing and deferring bills, we have a very severe. Kent Redfield's exactly right. We have a very severe problem on our hands. It's kind of come on gradually. I'm not going to point my finger at and say it was this governor or that legislator. It came on slowly, but it was predictable, and we could see it coming over the last few years. And we have kicked the can down the road. We've deferred action. We've denied there was a problem, and we can continue to do nothing anymore. I mean, we have to do something to address this problem.
It seems like, to bear with me here, another another cliche alongside of kicking the can down the road is that it seemed like it has built slowly but steadily into a perfect storm.
Oh, it is. It is. And it's got to be addressed. I mean, it's got to be addressed. And the governor is right to look at cutting spending. His five pillars, I have no problem with that. It probably borrowing to some extent has to be in the mix. Obviously, you want to maximize the federal money that you get and compete for grants and bring federal money to Illinois. That's a good idea. I think it's a great idea, of course, to focus on jobs, create a strong economic environment where there's job creation. He talked about that. I have no qualms with that. But the income tax right now at 1% and directing it exclusively to education, while on the part of me says, well, I really like that, of course, because I'm for education. I fought for education when I was a legislator. I'm here at the university. Yes, I want to see that. But the trouble with it is I think it creates a false hope or expectation that we're really solving the problem and avoiding the fiscal crisis that is really grabbing us. On the one hand, it does attract, you know, all the families and students and organizations that are pro-education on the governor's side. On the other, there's going to be also a countervailing effort by those in human services and healthcare industries that are left out of that.
And there's a lot of hurt there, too.
Absolutely. There's a lot of need, a lot of funding that they're going to be fighting for as well.
Okay, I'm going to take a call here in just one second. I do want to mention that economist Fred Gertz called in this afternoon just to let us know that 1% would raise $3 to $4 billion. And he says Charlie was a little off on his $1 billion projection. That's Charlie Wheeler, who heads the PAR program in Springfield, the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois at Springfield. So that's a little bit more money, but...
Well, I do feel better about that.
Okay.
I mean, thank you, Fred. If Fred Gertz says that that's what it raises, I'm completely convinced of it. And that begins to make some more sense to me. Okay, then let's see how we can make these numbers work. If it raises 1 to 1.5, as I was afraid of, then it doesn't really do much for us. So, okay, my concern is that if it helps on the structural deficit, then this political move to garner a linkage and support from the education community for an income tax increase begins to make some sense.
Okay, let's take this call now. Listener in Champaign on line one, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And I have a comment, and then maybe you could let me know if maybe I'm just off kilter here. I listened to your program. And the thing of it is, I felt at the very end that our governor was trying to manipulate us by youth. And I've got a son in college, and of course he was told he'd get the MAP grant, but then there was no funding for it, so none of the students did. And I feel like the governor is trying to manipulate us by going to the point of our hearts, which is our children's education. And am I the only one that feels that way? And is that the way that government and politicians work, is to manipulate to get what they want passed through? And thank you so much, and I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Well, you know, the governor's speech today was short because he's had the last couple of weeks, he's let a lot of us know what he was planning on doing. And a lot of this has been out there, and some of it's been discussed about education. We knew to expect that large cuts toward education, K-12 and higher education would be proposed. I remember seeing a newspaper article where the House Minority Leader, Tom Cross, was essentially accusing the governor of using, this threat to education, the threatened increase in class size, the threat that students won't be able to complete their college education, the threat that, you know, anywhere from 13 to 17,000 education-related jobs would be lost, as a way of putting pressure on the General Assembly to justify a tax increase. So, you know, is that manipulation? Well, it's certainly a political way of creating a linkage that will hopefully, from the governor's perspective, generate some support. But he does risk the feel that perhaps he is manipulating.
Let's turn our attention now to higher education, once again, and the trustees, the University of Illinois trustees, are meeting today in Champaign-Urbana. And it'll be interesting before the end of the day. I'm sure we'll have the chairman of the board weigh in on this proposal, as well as interim president Stanley Eikenberry. This morning, President Eikenberry says the state is currently $500 million behind what it owes the university. That includes the $28 million owed for this semester's students attending the university through the Monetary Awards Program, or better known probably as the MAP Grant Program. The president says he continues to hear that the funding for the MAP grants will come through, but he wants to see the check in the mail. Eikenberry says the U of I was able to start planning for a fiscal 2011 budget with the anticipated loss of about $45 million in federal stimulus dollars, but he's still worried about fiscal 2011 without something to replace that money.
So I think that more quickly the state finds a solution to its core financial problem, and that's going to mean further belt tightening, but also revenue increases. So the more quickly that happens, the more optimistic we'll be in terms of being able to address some of the immediate financial problems that we've got.
Speaking at today's University of Illinois Board of Trustees meeting in Champaign, President Eikenberry says the university may consider borrowing money, but only as a last resort. U of I Chief Financial Officer Walter Knorr says state support to higher education has gone down nearly 30% in the past decade. Rick Winkle, comments, thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, higher education is it's part of the economic engine for the state. I mean, it's very clear. Certainly, the University of Illinois, with it's a huge research institution, which brings millions upon millions of federal dollars to the state. We have gigantic operations, hospitals, and clinics, and you know, of course, the heart of our mission is teaching, and we have 75,000 students. I mean, that's the core mission. And, you know, with that decrease in state funding that Walter Knorr referred to, it's precipitous. And it's a giant funding decrease over the years that higher ed has suffered. And that really does go to the core mission. That money actually does go to the teaching to the students. And so when you talk about classrooms and teachers and class size and MAP grants on affordability and access to higher education, it really does go to the heart of the matter for the university. And as our teaching goes, so does the rest of the university, because it really is, again, I'll say it, it's the heart of the matter. And if you have if higher education begins to, you know, University of Illinois begins the path toward mediocrity in the quality, which we're not, but we don't want to go there. We don't want to go down that path, which we would be pulled down that path if we continue to see this kind of funding, underfunding for that core mission of teaching at the university. So I mean, that's a clear and present danger. Yeah. It truly is.
Let's talk about another area of the budget that is really tough. The governor, as I understand it, although I didn't hear him talk about it today, he has proposed reducing income tax sharing with local governments.
He did mention that.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah, $300 million. That'd be revenue sharing with local governments. And certainly that's going to impact municipalities and counties in a big way. I know locally that, you know, there's been some estimates I see here in the News Gazette where there'd be a 30% drop in the revenue stream at the county, Champaign County. And Urbana is looking at, under this proposal, a loss of $1 million, according to the mayor. And that's, you know, for local government, they have to run very lean operations, very efficient operations. And my hat's off to their work. And they've come to depend on the promise of the state, just as higher education has, but the promise of the state for funding. And if you end up with that kind of cut, that kind of precipitous cut, what you're essentially doing is forcing the municipalities, forcing the counties then, if they're going to continue to provide the same level of services, they have to pass that on to their local property taxpayers or depend on local sales tax generation. They have to foot their own bill then. And so essentially what the state is doing is shifting its problem to the local governments, which then becomes all of our problems.
Yeah. Do you think this proposal will fly?
Well, I got to tell you, I met with a group of mayors, the Metropolitan Mayors Caucus in Chicago last week. And they're in no mood to sit by idly and just simply accept this as the verdict. You're going to you know, each of the 118 state representatives, each of the 59 senators, I guarantee, have counties and municipalities in their districts, and they will hear from their mayors and their county boards about the impact, and they certainly will. I think it's going to be very difficult for that actually to be enacted.
Yeah. What do you think the answer is, or what would put us on track to begin to build a solution to this very, very, very serious problem, and something that you could get people on board?
Well, Illinois politics has become something, an end. It's practice for its own sake. And what I mean by that is that sometimes Illinois politics has become so, and I don't want to sound like Pollyanna here, but so political that it's an end in itself. And the whole notion of actually governing and making tough decisions and addressing issues like the structural deficit have been neglected. And the Illinois politics has been used instead for the end of empowerment and building a caucus and keeping a majority, and that's become the end in and of itself. It has stunted our growth in Illinois. It has that kind of dysfunction in the body politic now has translated over time, because of our inability to address these tough issues, into a fiscal dysfunction. And so now here we are with a fiscal crisis bordering on catastrophe. You know, you can't overstate it. We are insolvent. Our liabilities outweigh our assets. We can't pay our bills on time. We're insolvent. We're dysfunctional financially. What it's going to take is the governor and the legislature developing a sense of urgency and courage and trust. And they have to come together and work through a solution that will eliminate this structural deficit, or it doesn't have to be in 1 year, but over time. It's got to be, I agree, a mixture of cutting expenditures, perhaps some short-term borrowing, maximizing federal money, just as the governor said. We want to create new jobs. And if the tax increase is actually $3 to $4 billion with the 1%, as long as we then, after we put that into place, we exercise not only the political will to enact these changes, these structural changes, but then have the political will to actually govern with a sense of fiscal responsibility. So in other words, once we're out of the fire, we don't jump right back into it. Once we get our fiscal house in order, we don't go on another spending binge. We don't let a structural deficit creep back into our system. So we have to have trust among our leaders to a solution. Once they have a solution, the budget's balanced, they have to practice fiscal responsibility.
What's the likelihood of that happening?
You know what? They have to do it eventually. They have to. I mean, I would predict here that this budget probably won't be passed. I hate to be the pessimist, but I don't think it will. Although linking it up to education, the more I think about it, I have to admit, I mean, that's very it may seem manipulative, but it does have its point. It creates a leverage. But what might really happen is that they come out with a short, you know, a 6-month budget. This has become almost conventional wisdom lately. A 6-month budget merely essentially extending the situation, the status quo, going further down the road that we talked about earlier, just without any changes. And, you know, hoping for the best after the election, after the gubernatorial election, and just say, you know, we have two candidates. One wants to raise taxes. One wants to cut spending. And so we'll make this a referendum. You pick, and, you know, to the voters, to the taxpayers. You pick. Make it a referendum in November. Whoever wins, we'll go that route. So if Pat Quinn wins, we'll pass a tax increase in January. If Bill Brady wins, then we're going to let Bill Brady figure out how to make those cuts. So that may well be how it works through. I don't know. But for all that to really work, it still requires the governor, whoever it is, mm-hmm. in January, have trust and respect among the leaders in the legislature, be able to work through. Because I don't think it's all going to be a tax increase and no cuts and all, or all cuts and no tax increase. It's going to be a combination of these things.
What's the cost of doing nothing?
The cost of doing nothing, in my opinion, and you know, Fred Gertz or somebody, you know, an expert, a public finance expert would be better able to answer that. But it seems to me that we're to the point now where, you know, you can't just through politics create a false perception, a dodge, a smoke and mirrors situation where you kind of, so to speak, manage your way through the situation and hope that the economy will improve and that things will get better and money will start coming into the coffers and things will work out. That won't work. We're beyond that. We're into insolvency as a practical matter. So the numbers eventually become all too real and reality catches up. And what is a crisis today? Let's pick another word, a cataclysm, where you actually end up with, you know, schools shutting down, students being sent home, you know, medical bills not being paid, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it could come to that. Now, we should be smart enough, I would hope, to see that coming and not deny it and to do something constructive about it and defer no longer. We need to address this situation. We need strong leadership. And right now, that's what we're looking for in Illinois. And that's, I think, is what people are clamoring for. They want a strong leadership. Quite frankly, I think it needs to start with the governor.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. We're talking this afternoon about Governor Pat Quinn's budget message. He delivered that message today to a joint session of the Illinois General Assembly during the noon hour. And Rick Winkle is with us this afternoon from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions, your comments. What are your thoughts on the state of the economy in Illinois and the governor's budget proposal and what lies ahead? You can join us with a phone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. You can also join us by email. Our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu, will-talk@illinois.edu. Republicans have proposed reducing the benefits new state employees get from pension systems and switching Medicaid to a managed care plan. What are the pros and cons of these proposals? And if we're going to move to a point where we're talking about people working with one another, could there be some movement in this regard?
Well, I'd like to think so. I mean, what's interesting about the situation, let me answer just slightly roundabout.
Okay.
Republicans will be at the table is my expectation because, as I understand it, and the governor only touched on this, he said that there'll be borrowing, longer-term borrowing. That takes a 3/5 vote. That means you need Republicans on board. So if Republicans are going to be on board for the long-term borrowing, if they're going to be on board for the education income tax, then I would think that they would be pushing for a reform of the pension system. And also using a managed care model for Medicaid, both based on the rationale that it would be more efficient, more cost effective. It'd be a way of delivering pensions and health care services in a more efficient, cost saving way. That's going to be their pitch. I think that in the past, recent past, that's been pretty much ignored. But if Republicans are going to be a part of this solution and if we're going to actually have an atmosphere of negotiation and trust, good faith negotiation and respect for each other, then we have to look at all of the possibilities, whether they be Democrat or Republican ideas.
Okay, let's take some more calls. Our next caller is in Champaign, waiting for us on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi there.
Hi.
I had a question I wanted to ask. I don't know whether this will be something that Rick will know about, but with a state income tax, I know there's always a great deal of concern from many about raising income taxes, but I'm wondering, relatively speaking, in nearby states, if our state income tax is low or high relative to those, and whether or not this is something that, at least in consideration of the context we're living in, if increasing state income tax would put us closer to where others are, or we'd be moving well in advance or exceeding others in nearby states such as Indiana or Iowa or Ohio.
Okay, you want to hang on for a follow-up?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Rick Winkle?
Well, I don't have the exact numbers, but my understanding, my recollection, is that this would not put us at a competitive disadvantage with our neighbors. That we have at 3% flat income tax a low rate compared to our neighbors. But I'm not. I can't give you the exact percentages for our neighbors and where they are exactly. So, but we have talked about this in the past, that this would be doable and not put us at a disadvantage economically or as a competitive disadvantage.
Listener, want to follow up?
I guess only to say I know I'm someone who is very much in favor of an increase, and I feel like services we receive are important, and I think they probably advantage some of those who need the services and are in more financial difficulty than others of us. So I guess I'm wondering how likely in a political climate of today. It sounded like he said before, some combination is probably going to be needed. Supposing, is there any likelihood that something could exceed what Pat Quinn was recommending today, or is that totally out of the picture?
Well, you know, we have to it's possible. I don't think it's probable. In fact, I think it's going to be very, very difficult to pass this as it is. And we have to be a little careful, too. I mean, I know I believe it's the Civic Federation was recommending going from 3% to 5% for the individual income tax rate, and corporate would be 4.8 to 6.4. And quite frankly, in 2005, I recommended that in some legislation for education at those same rates. That was a different time and a different economic situation. My point here is that given the current economic recession, which is the worst since the Great Depression, we have to be careful that we, in an effort to raise revenues for programs, that we don't raise the income tax rate to an extent that we create a bad business climate, which drives income out of the state and businesses and impacts in a very negative way job creation. So in other words, I mean, you know, people that would be hit by the income tax rate can easily relocate. And that gets to your other question, but there are states beyond the area where they may find lower rates. For instance, I think Florida doesn't have an income tax, as an example. But here in the Midwest, I think we'd still be in pretty good shape at moving from 3% to 4%, as Governor Quinn talked about.
And let's take another call now, another listener in Champaign, waiting for us on line two. Hello.
Thank you. Well, I can appreciate we need to work on both sides of the equation of controlling spending and raising taxes, but I think it's also time to, and I realize this would probably require an amendment to the state constitution, but I think we need to have a graduated income tax. I think people who can afford to pay more taxes ought to be, you know, pulling their share of the burden, because there's an awful lot of people who at the lower end of the income scale who, you know, they really are having a hard time as it is. And, you know, somebody who's making a quarter, half a million or more a year is got more room in their budget to, you know, help with the responsibilities of carrying the state forward. And certainly I think, you know, any politician who says that we can't have or we don't need to raise income taxes to or somehow raise revenues to solve this problem is just lying, because I don't think it's possible to cut our way out of this big deficit that and debt that we have.
You're right that we need to, if we're going to the graduated income tax, we would have to amend the Constitution, the Illinois Constitution. Governor Quinn last year in his budget address recommended and actually a larger income tax increase, I think from 3 to 4.5%, and approached the issue of graduated income tax in an indirect way by creating exemptions, which would provide some relief to the middle class, for instance, which is what you're getting at. But I have to tell you that fell on deaf ears in the legislature. That went nowhere. It was dead on arrival. But this is a new year, and maybe that'll come back up again. I don't know.
Follow up?
Well, I think that there's, you know, and maybe Republicans are more guilty of this than Democrats, but the Democrats haven't been very good about it either. You know, every time somebody talks about taxes, it's just like, oh, the world is coming to an end. This is just unfair. And, you know, I mean, we have to find a way to pay our bills, or we're going to end up, you know, like some third world country. And, you know, I think we should also move the school funding away from property taxes onto income taxes as well. But then I remember how Governor Edgar savaged Don Clark Netsch in the elections many years ago. And then, you know, it was interesting after he won the election, he comes back and says, well, maybe we need to do that. And of course, after campaigning against it, there was no way the legislature was going to, you know, come around to that. And we've been stuck in that situation ever since. And that's part of our structural problem, I think, as well.
Okay. I want to thank the listener for his call.
Well, I mean, if it comes back to a partisan battle, then we're not going to get much accomplished. The caller's, you know, citing some history, and I'm not going to dispute his recollection. But right now, we've got a crisis that we're going to have to put these differences aside and consider all the alternatives to come up with a constructive and realistic and sustainable solution to a really serious problem.
And somebody has sent us a note by email, Todd Gleason, and I thank Todd for this. He's coming up pretty soon here with the Closing Market Report. But 7 states have a flat rate personal income tax, and here are the numbers. Okay, we're at 3%. Colorado, 4.63%. Indiana, 3.4%. Massachusetts, 5.3%. Michigan, 4.35%. Pennsylvania, 3.07%. And Utah, 5%. So let's take another call. Up next, Urbana, line 1. Hi.
Hi. Is this me?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. I was doing some back-of-the-envelope figuring, and with that proposal that Governor Quinn made last year to raise it to 4.5%, but then to, I think the idea was to raise the personal exemption from 2,000 to 6,000 per person.
That's right.
And on that, a family of 4 with an income of $50,000, at least if you had $50,000 on the line where you figure your tax, they would get a tax cut under Governor Quinn's proposal, as opposed to a tax increase. I think if it were $60,000, they'd have an increase, but at $50,000, a family of 4 would get a tax cut.
Right, and that's how he was trying to get the graduated effect without having an express or explicit graduated rate.
Yeah, that's the only way to do it, unless you are going to persuade two-thirds of the legislature or whatever it is to propose a constitutional amendment and then get the state to pass a constitutional amendment for a graduated income tax. So it seems to me that was an eminently reasonable proposal, and I think it's a darn shame that the legislature didn't go for it. And I think I heard Speaker Madigan earlier this afternoon saying, well, you know, the Senate passed that proposal, but he had a straw vote in the House, and the Democrats weren't going to go for it. Well, to me, the idea that Speaker Madigan conducts business by asking for a straw vote among his Democratic legislatures is kind of weird, because he's the one that has all the money that pays for their political campaigns and everything like that. It seems to me he has a lot more influence if he would swing it around. But in any case, there was a lady called earlier and felt that she was being manipulated on this sort of thing. Well, I'm thinking of somebody sitting on the railroad tracks with the railroad train coming down upon them, and then somebody coming up and saying, I think maybe you better get off the tracks because the railroad train's coming down here, and then getting the answer, oh, I'm being manipulated. Don't manipulate me.
Well, I think that she feels like maybe the tracks have been rerouted to her or something, but I understand your point.
And I've gotten another email message, and this is from someone who has a different point of view than some of our callers this afternoon. Illinois State Budget. He says, education, government, and medical have lived the good life for years. Private industry has seen job losses and benefit cuts for many years, especially in Illinois. Welcome to the new world. Their share of the pain has now come due. It was fine to ship manufacturing jobs overseas for cheap labor, but now they're finally realizing who was paying all the bills. Parenthetically, taxes.
Yeah, well, you know, he makes a point. It is over the years, we have... And this is what we're talking about. We have spent more than what we brought in. If we care to spend more on something for health care, for education, et cetera, if we do that as a matter of policy in a deliberative process and then through the evidence, the economic analysis, the fiscal situation, we properly fund it, then it's not a problem. The problem really is, and to that extent he's right, We've tried to have it both ways. You cannot have the level of service, regardless of how wonderful and beneficial and how much we need that service, if we don't pay for it. And if we continue down that track over a long period of time, he's right. The numbers will come back and get us. And we can't pretend and deny that we don't have to do anything because these are important services. Well, the numbers don't lie and they catch up with you, and eventually this kind of structural deficit comes back and it's come home to roost. Mm. And I think that's his point. And I think what he's saying is that in private industry and private business, we would have this would have been sorted out a long time ago. In private business, if you have a business that has more liabilities and assets and cannot pay its bills, it's bankrupt. And it no longer can function, and it's broken up for creditors. Well, we're the state of Illinois. We may be insolvent, but we can't go that route. So we're going to have some spending cuts, and those probably will include, in some way, it's going to have to include the things that he's mentioned. And yes, there will be pain, and the governor himself mentioned that. There's no quick and easy fix and a way to dodge that. It's simply come home to roost, and we've got to deal with it.
I've got one last question here on the table that I want to throw out, and then we'll have to wrap it up because we're right here at the edge of our time. Maybe we can have a minute or two on this. Part of the governor's plan is to borrow $4.7 billion, and he calls this strategic borrowing. And I think for the public, and I think maybe for a lot of us, you kind of wonder, does that make sense? And I guess the idea is here is to leverage other other revenue. Is that right? And does this make sense?
Well, thank goodness we can still borrow. And it probably does have to be a part of the mix. And does it make sense to borrow on operating expenses? Normally, if it's a one-time episode where we have an emergency or something, you know, yes, it makes sense to short-term borrow and to fill a gap. But to make it a part of an ongoing way of paying for our state operations, that's irresponsible. And that will compound the problem that we have already. And, you know, we have to pay it back. And even though, yes, we still have a good bond rating because of the wealth of the state, we are a very wealthy state. Thank goodness we're a wealthy state. But, you know, it comes to a point where if we don't get our fiscal act together, our bond rating will plummet. And we could get to a point where we have difficulty borrowing even. Right now, we still can borrow. Whether we should borrow $4.7 billion right now for operations, probably not. But we may be at a point where we have little choice.
And if a three-fifths majority is needed to do this, it's a tall order.
It's got to be bipartisan.
Okay, there we have to leave it. Rick Winkle, thank you so much for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you.
Rick Winkle is the director of the Office of Public Leadership in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs and an adjunct professor of law in the College of Law at the University of Illinois. He's also a former state lawmaker, having served in both chambers of the Illinois General Assembly.